Welcome to the Auto Detailing Podcast, where we bring you the latest information in the car care industry with special interviews from the leading professionals in the industry. Now, here's your host, Jimbo Balaam.
Welcome to episode 48 of the Auto Detailing Podcast. I'm Jimbo, your host, and today on the show we have Rennie Doyle. Rennie is a master level detailer not only within the automotive detailing industry, but also within the exclusive private corporate jet industry, and has worked on some of the finest and rarest automobiles and aircrafts in the world. 11 years ago, after numerous requests from others who wished to learn detailing at a proven level that delivered higher than average results and profits, Rennie formed his business, Detailing Success. Rennie has trained people from across the globe, and his passion for detailing never stops. Hey, Rennie, welcome to the show.
Jimbo, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good, thanks. Was there anything you wanted to add to that?
You know, I've been detailing. I'm 48 years old. I've been detailing since I was 13. And if you're listening to this and you think you're burned out, just keep moving. It's simple as that. Because I've been doing it a long time, and I love it more now. You get through the burnouts. So that's it.
I started to realize that my burnouts came about every 2 years, and I'd go through maybe a couple months. And you're right. You just kind of got to power through it and suck it up.
You do. It's a marathon. It's a triathlon. It's the long haul. And you know, I've had the privilege and honor of owning other businesses and other industries, and it's no different. Burnouts, and it's present. I don't care what you do, you're going to go through a burnout.
Totally. So today we're going to be mainly talking about aircraft detailing, because I'm pretty fascinated by that. But before we get into all that, can you tell us how you got into the detailing industry at 13?
You know, I grew up in Colton, out in the Inland Empire in Southern California, and not a lot of money out there. I was a white kid in a Latino community. Had a lot of, you know, I tell people that I was born poor and I never knew it. We just had we didn't have a lot of money, but we had a lot of lifestyle, and we had a lot of passion. We had a lot of, fun in the Latino community. You know, families, everything, friendships, anything. And I learned loyalty at an early age. Well, we were hanging out in the neighborhood one day, and this plane comes by and it's doing aerobatics. You know, at that time it was doing loops and everything else. We didn't know what the heck was going on. So, we took off on our BMX bikes and followed the airplane, couldn't find it, and got about 7 miles. And the next day, 13 miles later, we came to Rialto Airport, and I started hanging out. In 2-3 weeks into hanging out, the guy got tired of me and said, "Hey, if you're going to hang out here, I'm going to put you to work." And he started me out washing airplanes. And as we got more proficient, and he became more trusting in my abilities, and saw that I wasn't going to go away, that I was sticking at the airport, is he actually started teaching me how to polish airplanes and polish aluminum and trade for teaching me how to fly.
Wow, so you actually started on airplanes. It wasn't like you started on cars and kind of transitioned to airplanes. That's where you started.
I started. I really feel that nothing happens by chance. And ironically, you're at an age growing up to where I remember the movie being made, but remember the movie Top Gun?
Oh yeah.
So all the aerial shots, matter of fact, if you remember when Goose and Maverick go into the flat spin and Maverick ends up getting killed. Yep. Well, my mentor was the man that did that flat spin maneuver in the movie. He did a lot of the air-to-air filming in that, and his name was Art Scholl. And at the end of that movie, he wasn't very happy with how that flat spin film turned out, and he decided to go out over the Pacific in San Diego and reshoot it, and tragically, his plane went down, and he was killed, and we lost him. We lost a great man. I lost my first mentor.
Wow. So, how long did you work for that company before you decided to branch off and start your own business?
At the ripe age of 14, I started Spectrum Detailing, and Spectrum Detailing. I worked it until I was about 19 years old, and I sold it, and. Yeah, so it was pretty young. I mean, looking back at it, I had a name. Was it a business? No. I mean, you know, I thought I was, you know, all that in a cup of tea, but it wasn't happening. So it instantly I knew, and I really relied on detailing most of my life. And we got in. There's a famous Hot Rod Valdez. He's a famous pinstriper. He's really popular. Him and I grew up together. And his dad and him taught me a lot about paint. So I ended up, that's how I got into car detailing. And then growing up in Colton, in the lowrider community, I had friends of mine build lowriders, and that's where I learned to sand. And back then, we just block sanded and hand sanded, and then would have to take, you know, the paint back down. So, it, you know, I started at a young age, and it's really, I won't say all I know, but it's been my primary passion for my life.
So did you always have a steady stream of aircrafts and cars, or did after you sold the business, did the aircraft kind of die off and did you mainly get into cars, or has it pretty much always been a nice mixture of both?
It was, you know, in the early days, it was a nice mixture of both. I actually did more airplanes when I was younger because that was my forte. It was my niche. Yeah. And then when I got the car bug and Hot Rod and his dad got me into that, the volume, I always tell people this, is that I made my living with auto detailing. I made my lifestyle with the airplanes.
I like that. I like that. Yeah. And that's kind of in a different way, but in the same way, I guess. I don't know how I'm trying to say it, but you know, that I compare the sexy detailing, like the super high-end cars, the super elite cars, and I think I talked to Scott Perkin about this, was the sexy part of detailing is like the detailing everyone wants to do, but it's not necessarily what makes the money. You know, sometimes it's the minivans that make the money. So that's, you know, I tell guys, hey, make the money and have the fun sexy work too. And it kind of seems like that was it too.
You know, we ran six shops in our heyday. In 07, we started probably in about 2001 or 2002, we started selling shops off and through attention to details. And we took, and we were $1 million a year detailing business through all the locations. And 80% of our volume was in the auto side. 50% of our profits was from the aircraft side.
Wow. So if there's someone looking to get into aircraft detailing, there is a high profit margin.
There is. There's also a high cost, though. You can't just jump in. I tell everybody that's going to get into, you know, I've got a couple friends that are really into it with me, and you've really got to know your way around aircraft. You can get in trouble. You know, for us, Jimbo, when you're detailing a car, you might put a little dressing on the brake pads and maybe get them a little slippery, but usually not. With an airplane, if you do something wrong, you're bringing the airplane down, and so the risk is much higher. So the profits are there, but the insurance is very, very expensive, and you've got to know your way around an airplane.
Let's get into detailing an airplane a little bit, and maybe we'll even talk about detailing Air Force One, because I think that would be pretty cool. Talk about, how did that come about, to detail Air Force One?
You know, again, I just did a podcast myself called it's Staying Busy in the Fall and Winter Months. And one thing that I talked about is the 6 degrees of separation. And, you know, back when you were just a baby 26 years ago, the six degrees of separation was true. But now they call it the 3 degrees of separation because of social media, the internet, and all the electronic and technology that we've got. Is, you know, Jimbo, if you wanted to go out and do a leading plane right now, if you wanted to go out and do a Gulfstream, you're within three people of having somebody know somebody that owns or operates a Gulfstream.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, so it's a small world. So flashback to 2002, for several, probably about 3 or 4 years, I'd been, you know how the wings on an airplane churn up now?
Yeah.
At the very end?
Yeah.
Well, there's a guy named Joe Clark that basically put, those are called winglets. And Joe Clark is a guy out of Seattle, Washington. And at the time, we had a shop in Sun Valley, Idaho, which is a bedroom community for the ultra rich. And Joe Clark had a house there. And we'd been dealing with his cars and his airplanes for years. And we just had a great time with him. He's a nice guy. He was really involved in aviation. I got to go up, and he had some vintage warplanes that not only did I get to work on, but we got to go up in. And he was just as I tell people, you know, Barry McGuire says that he's car crazy, and I'm plain nuts. it was just an exciting relationship, an exciting client to have. And on a cool November day in 2002, he goes, "Rennie, you know, you're the genie in a bottle for polishing out bright work, for polishing out aluminum. I've got a plane for you that I need you to get up here and take a look at and see if you can rescue it." I said, great. And I said, when do you want me up there? And he goes, what's your tomorrow look like? And I said, yeah, ironically, I can do it. And I went up, and it was Air Force One. It was the retired Air Force One, the very first jet Air Force One that President Eisenhower Kennedy put into action back in the 50s and 60s.
Wow. What an experience.
I got up to it, and they had me meet with the curator and the outside display manager, Evan Elliott. And Evan's, this guy does work on vintage airplanes for the Smithsonian. I mean, this guy is when you bring Evan in, it's the Super Bowl of aviation. He really knows what he's doing. And they had some Boeing polishing techs there, and they didn't like me very much because they told Boeing that it couldn't be salvaged. So here's a piece of Americana, a piece of history that is going to be painted over to make it look right. And the Air Force wasn't very excited about it. The Department of Defense wasn't very excited about it. But Boeing's telling these guys it can't be done. So I went up on November 16th of 2002 and did some test spots. And I said, it can be done. I can fix it. And on May 28th of 2003, we went up there, and we literally got heckled by the polishers from Boeing. They told us it wasn't going to be able to be done. We were wasting their money. We were a scam. We're non-union in their union, so they weren't too happy about that.
So where had the plane been stored at to be so heavily oxidized?
It was. It still is. It's still outside in Seattle at Boeing Field. It's on display at the museum. And we've been able to manage it since that time. You know, it looks great. Now, the good news is that when I did it back in 03, you know, they said it couldn't be done. And I remember the fourth or fifth day on the project, the head polisher guy came up to me and he goes, hey, get down here. I need to talk to you for a second. I thought, oh boy, man, this guy's going to rag on me more. Comes down and extends his hands out. And he goes, you know what, man, you did it. I mean, I can't believe. And, you know, we still had another 10 days to go, but the test panels were perfect. And, at that time, it was going to go back into under storage inside within 4 or 5 years. And that's been over a decade. And next year, it's going inside.
Wow. So let's talk about the process of, you know, you coming up to the airplane for the first time. How do you kind of assess it when you're doing the test spots? Yeah, tell us about the machine you're using, the type of product that you're using. Kind of take us there, that first initial trip up and you're seeing the plane for the first time.
Well, the first thing I did is, I'll keep the language nice, is I walked up to it and I went, oh, crap. I really thought, because the aluminum was completely... there was no reflection. You could see the outline of your body, and that was about it. It was just a shadow, and they wanted it to come back to mirror or close. You know, that was the goal. And we had taken, and you know, we've been working on corporate jet metal polishing for, you know, years, for decades, and so that wasn't any. I knew the product to use. We had an aviation specialized aluminum polish that we used. And we also took Lake Country. It was real supportive. Ironically, I'd been in one of their main executives. He's still Scott. He's a competitive detailer at Oshkosh, at the Oshkosh event, which is one of the world's largest aviation events. Scott and I competed against each other for years for championships and best of class and so forth. And it's kind of the Pebble Beach of aircraft. Hmm. And so Scott and I gone back, and I know he had developed some really special wool pads over the years. So the first thing I did is I called him, told him I was heading up there. I said, do you by chance have any of the pads? He was kind enough to send me up one of his used ones just to see if I could, you know, get it, because you got to order months in advance to get them made. And we went through, we did the test spots, the museum, the Air Force, the Department of Defense, everybody that was involved in it at that time, they're blown away. Now they just said, you know, can you do that on a large scale? You'd made 4 feet of it look good, but yeah, you know, you've got another 200 feet to go. And we said, yeah, of course I can. And inside I was screaming, oh, I'm done. My career is toast. If I don't pull this one out, it ain't happening, man. I'm going to be washing. I'm going to be the guy at the car wash whipping his towel around and whistling for you to come get your car, you know, if this doesn't work.
So yeah, how did you, now that you've gotten the job or the okay to do it, how do you start to assemble a crew for that, especially something like aircraft detailing? I mean, I guess since you've been in that niche so long, you probably know other guys that – are capable of that, but how do you begin to put a crew together for that? And how big of a crew do you do?
Well, here's the ironic thing is back in 02, it was just my crew. And we had seven of us total. Five of us were actual detailers. The other two guys were supporters and just came, and they knew what to get us when we needed it. And then we had three or four volunteers that were just cleaning the belly of the plane and underneath the wings for us. So we were there for 2 weeks, 14 days. We had, I can't recall now, it was 2,200 man hours into it, so you can do the math. It was unbelievable how much we worked. Literally, we worked into the night. We just got lights out because, as you know, paint inspection lights, we're using halogen back then. We could angle and we could actually see what we were doing at night. So we would work into the night just a little bit and then come back and do it. Flash forward to years ahead after I started training, is we've gotten better and better at selecting our teams. And this year when we did it, you know, we actually had enough time left over. There's 32 of us. We had enough time left over to, and we threw a little Concorde jet in on it. You know, not any big deal. So we did Air Force One, a Concorde jet, a Tomcat, an F-14 Tomcat, an A-6 Intruder, a little Fiat jet. So we threw some extra in. So we've got the pattern. Yeah. We got the pattern down now, though. And I'm going to tell you, the guys that it's out there, you can find out who did it. These are the top of the guys, man. I mean, my crew in 2003, they did a great job. Nothing like this crew this last year did. These guys were unbelievable, and they're all volunteering just like I am.
Wow. So do you guys head up once a year just to maintain the finish on it?
We do on that particular Air Force One. Now we're talking with other Air Force One, and there's more out there, retired units, and we're in discussions actually with all of them right now. And then I've been a consultant when President Bush was in office. I was actually a consultant on the 747s too.
And then you have, as you head up there for 2 weeks, you're still trying to maintain your business back home, right? Or do you shut that down as you head up there?
No, we all of us, we're up this year, it was 6 days, and 32 of us, 6 days, and every single, well, you know, some of the guys have got bigger shops, and they've got staff that can kind of keep them going. Okay. I'm going to say that 80% of us, we're shut down for that week, man. I mean, not only are we taking, you know, we've got some allowances, the museum helps us a little bit, so we can pick up some flights, we can pick up some hotels, but not everybody. And you've got to earn a spot onto the team. The guys that have come back, about 75% of the team this year was repeat. They've been on it before. So it leaves a small window, but you know, I help out as much as we can. We got food sponsors. We Sonex and Flex jumped in, and without those two, it wouldn't have happened. They kicked in money. They kicked in product. We've had McGuire's in the past jump in and help us and support us. This year, Detailer's Helper jumped in and gave us each one of their belts, which was really cool. And then we had a lot of independent companies come in. P&S Sales out of Northern California, they sponsored a couple of lunches. We had Get Off Clean, Go Clean Products, they sponsored it. So we have people from all over the industry jump in and really help out, and we couldn't do it without them.
Wow. How do you do you guys each pick a section of the plane, or do you guys debrief before you start? How does that how do you guys strategize to make sure you're covering every inch of the airplane?
You know, I've got the best leaders in the world. I mean, our team leaders are unbelievable. And Michael Pena and Harry Sandwith out of Jersey. And then we have six or seven individual leaders that lead up teams themselves. Couldn't do it without them. But this year, what we did is we actually have four finishers, and those finishers are guys that have been on this level of project before. They know what's going on, and believe it or not, four guys finished the whole fuselage, all the polished aluminum. Four guys, and four guys only, finished that all out on their own over 6 days.
Wow.
But that's their only task, and they're really good at what they do. Now if you think black sensitive paint, you know how we got those finicky paints out there now?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Take that times 1,000. Your hands, your eye coordination, you got to know the exact amount of product to put on it. You got to know the exact speed and exact how many passes and exactly how big. Now, here's the bad news. Later in the afternoon, it changes because of the humidity.
Oh. Are you guys mainly using rotary polishers?
We're not. We've found out, we tested all of them. And when I say this, that we tested all of them, I really mean it. And we tested DAs, we've got drum polishers, we've got everything. We have figured out a speed and a finish rate for the forced action polishers, the Flex forced action, that leaves a flawless finish. It's unreal. Now, a lot of people, if you go up and look at that airplane today, they'll look at it and say, well, I still see imperfections. There is imperfections. Here's why. is in my job, you know, I've been around now, I've been doing classic warbirds and classic collector airplanes. You're talking this airplane, this Air Force, this particular Air Force One is valued at over $150 million.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, that's a lot of millions.
I wouldn't mind having that in my bank account.
So it's called preservation, not perfection. Mm-hmm. And it's the biggest challenge we have is especially with the younger guys is they want to go after it. Well, we had a couple of great guys that we broke their teeth this year. Their first time up. Matter of fact, everybody on the team this year, it's the first time ever polished aluminum. Everybody, because we had that great of a team.
Wow.
And the engines notoriously, let's go back to 2003. Mm-hmm. Each engine, we were there for 14 days, right? You know what? It took me 12 days to do the engines by myself.
Wow.
12 days. So we put some of the young guys, the newer guys, and some of the older, newer guys onto these engines. And they were ready. They're going to look, I don't know if you've seen a picture of me. I'm extremely bald.
Yeah.
And shaved head, hair follicle challenged, that is. So they, you know, these guys were ready to look like me. They're pulling their hair out because they could just, you know, they couldn't figure it out. And the first day they're on it the first day and it didn't look perfect. And I said, don't, patience, that's going to happen. And second day they come back and it started to look better. And the third day, all of a sudden it looks great. So it's a whole nother level. And even on corporate aircraft, it's a whole nother level. It's hard to explain unless you're there, but it's very difficult. You got to be a very skilled technician to get to that point.
So let's kind of bring it back to the corporate jet detailing, and say someone is listening and they want to break into that niche. They want to do aircraft detailing. Where do they start?
First thing to do, don't call me. Is I could plug my company right now and I won't. First thing to do is go in and get and take a flight lesson. Go up, get in an airplane, and take an hour flight lesson. Let them get you on the stick. It's pretty easy to do. It's not too expensive. And then go ahead and buy your ground books and go ahead and start learning. Go through your ground courses and start learning what it is to be a pilot. Mm. Once you're feeling really comfortable around it, that you're probably a good match for detailing, believe it or not. And pilots, you know, pilots are, they can sniff each other out. Somebody that doesn't know anything about an airplane, a pilot can pick you up from a mile away. And there's a trust issue. It's the biggest amount. Jimbo, remember your first like really expensive car you did,
yep.
You know, when you're detailing?
Yep.
Do you remember how untrusting the client was and they kind of hovered around a little bit and they're nervous because you're young and everything else?
Yep. They could sniff, like you said, they can sniff you out.
They can sniff you out. Well, imagine that. Now you've got a $65 million plane and they just put you in charge of it. They want to know that you know what you're doing. So the first thing to do, go get familiar with an airplane. Second thing to do is start talking to people that you know, your sphere of influence. Figure out what's going on in your local market. There's a couple different, let's talk about formalities. General aviation, little tiny, Cessnas. Everybody knows what a Cessna is, yep. Little propeller plane. There's a lot of those planes around. Unfortunately, the profit point on those aren't very high. Most single engine pilots, they're kind of like, well, a lot of them are doctors. They have plenty of money, but they don't want to spend it on you.
That's so true. It's even true with cars.
It is. And so, you know, that market's hard to break into. Is it good? You know, you can take and make $40, $50, $60, $100 an hour within that market without a problem. But it's going to take time, and you better have a backup plan, aka car detailing, motorcycle detailing, boat detailing, all that good stuff. So from there, you get up into the entry level corporate jets. Let's go into King Airs, twin engine turbines, and so definitely $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, $10 million planes. Those are a little more accessible. The people aren't as freaked out. A lot of those aren't what's called charter, are a Part 135, where they charter them out, kind of like a limo, if you put it that way, or a real high-end taxi.
Okay.
They move people around. There's a lot of need for that in the country. If you're in a hub, let's say you know, down where you're at in Orange County, Northern San Diego County, LA County, out in Ontario, Palm Springs, all these different areas. Here I was in Sun Valley, Idaho. Now, why Sun Valley? I went to school at Boise State. Go Boise State. Go Broncos. But Sun Valley was a little tiny pond, kind of like Palm Springs. It's a small pond with some really big fish. And I could actually jump into the pond and not get eaten because the sharks calm down when they're in a little pond. If I would have stayed in Southern California, where I was born and raised, those people never even noticed me. I would have never gotten Air Force One. It would have been, it still probably wouldn't have been done today. You know, it'd just be a pile of rotten aluminum. So you got to get connected. I mean, it's about, again, go back to your 3 degrees of separation. Mm-hmm. You've got to do that. The next thing from there is start cutting your teeth. Don't jump into things. You know, pilots want to tell you that they know everything about the airplane, and most pilots are very talented. But 80% of them don't know anything about the apparent side of an airplane. So a lot of people say, well, I got this pilot friend of me. And it's like, oh my God, you know, that's the worst person to take advice from, because they're using degreasers and scrubbing bubbles and everything they shouldn't be using on an airplane. And there's a little thing called hydrogen embrittlement. It's basically rust on an airplane. It's deterioration of an airplane. If you use the wrong products on an airplane, on that aluminum, guess what? You're going to take and eat into that aluminum, and you could cause structural damage that plane can't fly anymore. It's not fixable. Now, it takes years and years and years of exposure to that, but you got to know what you're doing. You can't just grab auto detailing products and go to work on an airplane.
Right. Huh. Okay. Then what?
Well, then the next thing to do is go out. If you're smart, you're going to get insurance. And what you want to get on that is hangar's keepers, just like we get garage keepers when you're working on cars, correct? Mm-hmm. Well, they got what's called hangar's keepers insurance, and you've got to go out and establish yourself on that. There's some great resources. The insurance back in the mid part of the decade, let's say from 2004 till about 2010, you're spending anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000 a year for that insurance. Now it's gotten a little affordable, and you might get that down. Ours has really come down because we've got a good proven track record. But I think we pay, I don't even think we pay $5,000 now for ours. So you're going to start out high and know that it can come down. And then once you get, you might have to just take whatever you can get, because it's really hard to get written on that level of insurance. Take what you can get, because each year you can go out and bid them, and now they're after you because you haven't had any claims. And, you know, knock on wood. Let me find some on my head. knock on wood, we've never had a claim. I mean, all these years, you know, we've been twisting polishers on aircraft for 30 plus years, and we've damaged them. Yeah, small stuff, you know, pay out of pocket stuff, but we haven't anything big happen. So as you get more vested and you get more a lot more experience, positive things start happening. And then the volume is that they might come in. What we do now is, we are doing such select numbers of aircraft. You know, to go out and do a Gulfstream now, it might sound really exciting to go work on a $100 million airplane. I hate to kind of sound spoiled, but I've been there, done that. And unless they're willing to pay a lot of money, my two specialties are interiors and bright work. That's really all I care about. Okay. The rest of it's that's where you make your money at. To go put some wax or sealant on an airplane, again, you're going to make wages off of it. Mm-hmm. But you want to, anytime that you can take and get a niche in a business, you're going to be way ahead. And bright work and the interior is where the niche is within the aviation industry.
Okay. Yeah, that is a good point. I know what you're saying when you say I don't want to sound spoiled or whatever, but after a while, it does just become a piece of metal.
You know, there's airplanes like you take in. We worked on a Millie Earhart Lockheed last year, and oh my God, it's one. There's one of them left in the world. It's the sister plane that she went missing in. I mean, I want to work on that. Yeah, I mean, I would have given my eye teeth. They didn't even have to, well, I didn't tell them that, but I would have done it for free. You know, I mean, it was just, it's a bucket list item.
Yeah.
You know, kill a 64 California Spider Ferrari. Yeah. I mean, if it comes into my shop, I'm going to do it for $200 just to do it because I'm a sucker. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, love that car.
Totally. So are there, for airplanes, are there maintenance programs or are there regulars that come often to get their, you know, interiors detailed or are there maintenance washes and stuff like that? Or is it kind of one-off stuff?
You know, it's both. The smart, it's like, how smart of an entrepreneur are you? Okay. How much can you sell yourself? If you can take and convince, you know, the value of you is only what people see in it.
Right.
And our tendency was, get this, we would have planes, we'd come in, especially during the busy season. Think about the holidays, you know, around Christmas, New Year's, think about Valentine's Day. We are always busy on Valentine's Day. and then over the summertime, all these corporate jets coming in and out. Well, they'd want quick hits. So we went out and we established contracts with all these various charter companies. And every time they'd land in one of our local markets, Sun Valley was our biggest office. Next from there was Dallas.
Wow.
Well, every time NetJets had a plane hit the ground and they needed a vacuum job, they'd call us up. We'd go in and vacuum it, wipe it down, make sure she looked and smelled pretty, and get back out. $400, bam. Train crew, two guys, they're in and out, 45 minutes, and they're out of there.
Wow.
Do the math.
Yeah.
Now, is that the standard? No. Are you going to start there? No. You know, you're going to have to work your way up to that.
Right. But it can. It is potential.
It's potential. It's hard to get there. You know, let me tell you what. Okay. A lot of us, did you play sports in elementary school and growing up?
Baseball
okay.
and basketball.
Baseball and basketball. I played football, did a little baseball, but mainly football. Tried a really small hand at college, and that was ugly. And I couldn't go and involve in the NFL. There's no way. How many games could you last in the NBA? I mean, could you go out there and contend with them?
Zero.
Zero. That's what airplane detailing at the highest levels are. That's the you are in the big leagues. You better be ready for it. Now, do NFL players start out at the NFL? No, just like you and I did, man. They're a little league, correct?
Right.
Well, guess what? That's what all those little general aviation planes are. That's what all the little tiny Cessnas. You start down in the minors and you work your way back up to the majors.
I like that. Cool. So let's transition now from airplane detailing to your business now, Detailing Success. Tell us about that.
Detailing Success was based off of, you know, just getting phone calls. A matter of fact, my original private student I went to some trainings and checked them out just to see what they're all about. And, I want to tell you, I was impressed, but it was entry level. I mean, it was great for guys that were just starting out, and that wasn't me. So I thought about training, but I wasn't digging it. And I was coming down, Mike Phillips was with McGuire's at the time, and I come down a couple of his open garages, and it was cool and all. And then a guy, Matt Williams out of Marysville, Ohio, he's still in business. Back in 2004, he calls me up off a forum that we're involved in, a pro forum. And he goes, listen, man, I want to come out and work with you. Will you train me for a week? And I was like, yeah. And so he came out, and it started a whole new niche for me. And so we played around with groups. We played around with all these different angles of training. And we've just got a perfect makeup right now for getting people off the ground and into a business. Or 50% of the people that I train is they're trying to get their business to the next level. They're done making 40, 50 bucks an hour. They want to get to the point where they're making, you know, a real lifestyle, 80, 100, 120 bucks an hour.
So you have training where guys can come to you, and do you have online-based training?
We do. We just launched. We've got I'm famous for is one-on-one. So you come in and train with me. You can bring a partner. We just launched a new program. It's two-on-one where my wife and I take on two students at a time. It's actually my favorite. We beta tested it for months with test subjects. I think I can actually train at a higher level with that, because now the students are banking off each other and they're learning from each other. And, you know, when you go to school, you know, anytime, I mean, you know, I'm a volunteer. I do search and rescue for the Sheriff's Department. Oh, wow. And, I just signed up. Here I am at 48 years old, and I just got recruited and, accepting a post, with the National Guard, wow, to train people and eventually train people in search and rescue and which is my specialty. I've got a giving heart, and I'm going to back off for a second. Is that if you're going to succeed in business, you better give back to the community that you're succeeding from.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I've been a reserve police officer, sheriff's deputy, and I've done search and rescue for 25 years. And just like in that training, man, when I've got somebody that really knows, there's a guy up in Jacksonville, Wyoming, that I took some training for search and rescue. Oh my God, this guy intimidated the hell out of me. And if it hadn't, once I calmed down, oh man, the things that I learned from him was insane. So when you're with an instructor, you know, especially when it's one-on-one and his eyes are on you, it's kind of nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. Some people don't, I don't mind because I'm a loudmouth, you know, and I'm the guy, if you go to training with, that you're going to hate, because I'm going to get every dollar's worth and I'm going to be right up front and I'm going to get my hands on the tools.
Well, you're perfect for podcast.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Sorry to break in.
That's it. Yeah. So, you know, I stayed away from the group trainings, the big group trainings, for purposes that I am that guy. I'm the guy that's going to make sure that I get my money's worth. Then you got the opposite guy that's a wallflower. that he's going to be real polite and he doesn't want to, you know, bug anybody. And so we decided that we've got various levels of training, one-on-one, two-on-one, and then we've got what's called an uber small group, which is just four students in the trainings. And my wife, you know, she's built this business with me. Matter of fact, all my kids, you'll love this. Our oldest daughter is a U.S. Marine. She's based over in Japan, Okinawa, Japan. And she and her two sisters and our sons, all of them learned to detail. Every one of them, it's a family business, and they had to know what they're doing in the business. So, you know, our business is about more than just training. We've got a community. We're known in the industry as the Detail Mafia. Which a whole different story, another podcast. Our official name to the public is Detailers Network, and we're doing a lot of amazing things. We're going after dealerships. Doing a lot with dealerships. We've got a lot of collectors that we're now working with, a lot of museums and so forth, and we're almost 200 strong. We've got our own community that's kind of like a Facebook for detailers. Yeah. And the only way that they get in there is they've got to come through the training. You know, they've got to come through. So I'm a blessed man because my best friends are now from within this industry and people that I've known for, you know, Matt Williams over a decade, and I've watched, you know, he came, Matt, I love you, but he was like, you know, had a lot of hair and was skinny and fit, and now he's married and he kind of looks like me. He's got a little less hair than he did and a couple kids, and but you know, I rag on him, but you know how proud I am of watching this young man turn into an entrepreneur.
Yeah, it's fun. There's so many things I could say, and the only thing that keeps coming to my mind is wife and kids will take your hair away and put on some pounds.
You know what, though? I'll tell you.
It's totally worth it.
It's totally worth it. You know, I mean, I'm coming down. There's 20 pounds less of me than there was 6 months ago, nice. And I'm a happy boy. But, I speak out, too, is I've worked very hard to get where I'm at. And you know, I got guys that love me in the industry, and I got some that just don't care for me. That's okay. But the one thing I've done is I've always stayed loyal to my family. When I was working and building our business, it was a 15-hour a day job. I didn't take away from my kids. When I got home, I put the computer down and I went and hung out with them. When they went to bed, Dad went back to work. Absolutely. And you know, if you're a young dad or if you're a young mom or you're a parent, maybe you're an older parent. You know, I'm 48. My youngest one's 10. Guess what, man? You cannot, with a pry bar, you can't pry me away from her. I took a little too much time away from my other three. Not much, but too much. Well, I'm not going to do that with this one. So, you know, the more you chase life, the more business is going to chase you. This whole overworking thing, the Europeans think we're nuts for a reason, because we are. We don't work smart enough. We work too hard and we don't work smart.
Yeah, man, you're speaking in my life right now. I have a 2-year-old daughter, and my wife's pregnant with a boy right now, and it's a struggle, you know, to try and succeed in business, but also succeed in life. And I've just come to the conclusion that if I don't have a family, I won't have any work, because I'll be so distraught, you know.
Yeah, and you know what? That's the point is, and I can tell you, what we think is going to get us to the next level. If you're happy and you work half as much, you're going to get there faster than if you're miserable and you work twice as much.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, how many times do we churn people off because we're overstressed, we're worn out, our patience is down? How many people do we send packing because they don't get a good vibe about us?
Good point. Good point. Love that. So what's one thing that you love most about the auto detailing business?
Oh, one?
Or as many as you got.
You know,
Maybe not as many, but give us a few.
I'll tell you what, the thing that turns me on, my situation is a little different because of being involved in mentoring guys and coaching them. You know, I can be a real hard nose. If you ask me something, I'm going to give you the truth. And some of these young entrepreneurs don't like hearing it. Even the guys I've trained. Because I'm going to tell them exactly how I see it, and not that my way is the only way, because it's not. People often ask me, you know, what do I got to do right to make it in detailing or make it in business? And I said, well, let me start with, there's a lot more that you can do wrong, because I've learned about every single one of them over the last 30 years. The people in the industry, when you get to know the especially the right people, and I'm going to say the majority of the people, mm-hmm. The people in this industry are unreal. Man, I'll get all emotional. I mean.
You can cry. You know, it's okay.
Yeah. You know, the guys have seen it me before. You know, the people are unreal. And when people get serious and they put their heads down and they start working smart and they work with a purpose and they keep their spiritual life in check and they keep their family life in check, and then they do business right and they live contagiously. They're a contagious person. You know, to see that happen, it's incredible. From there, you know, it's going to be seeing the transformation of vehicles. Dang, you know, I got ADD, so I'm pretty sure, you know, I think a lot of detailers do.
Guilty.
Yeah, guilty. And so, you know, to see something go from a rock to a jewel, I'm not going to build Rome. I'm not going to be Caesar. I'm not going to be Donald Trump. I'm not going to be, you know, any Bill Gates. It's just not. Matter of fact, it's never been in the cards, and it's not really what I wanted in life. If anybody wants to hand me over a few million that's listening, I mean, I'll gladly take it, and you know, I can help a lot of people with it. But here the reality is that, you know, I've come to the conclusion that it, you know, lifestyle, and you might at 26 years old, you know, I'm 22 years older than you. I'm going to tell you, it's going to be a jump and a leap, and you're going to be at your 40 and you're going to go, wow, where'd my 30s go?
I feel it now at 26. You know, I started my business at 18, and you know, my birthday is in August, so I just turned 26, and I'm like, oh man, where's it going?
it's going to, and I can't speak to you. This isn't aimed at you. This is aimed at all of us, especially you male characters out there. And I'm not casting stones because I'm hitting myself with this. A lot of what we do, and I see it every day, is ego driven. We so many people are out there in the detailing industry right now marketing to other detailers. And you know what? Unless detailers pay the majority of my bills these days. I mean, that's the fact. Other than my kind sponsors, Flex and Sonex Products.
easy. You know, they're not sponsors of this podcast yet.
we'll work on that. How's that?
Yeah.
They, you know, for the most part, detailers pay my bills, but do they pay yours?
No.
So you know what? I wonder why I don't see more detailers out there posting in consumer areas instead of dang Facebook getting into arguments. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, you know, that is just a reoccurring theme that I've witnessed through just doing this podcast for the past few months. And I've had the opportunity to speak with, you know, some of the top level guys in the industry and guys that a lot of detailers look up to. And to kind of touch on your point earlier, the guys at the top are top notch guys, and they live, eat, breathe everything for this industry, and it is awesome to see. And I forgot my other point. Wow.
See, and I'm old.
I know. I forgot what I was gonna.
Well, your wife's pregnant. It's your wife's pregnant. It's her fault.
And I got pregnancy brain. Go figure.
That's exactly it. You know what the bad news is that it you know. I hope that the leadership of the industry, you know, we got a lot of great mentors. I mean, yeah. People that I look up to, you know, Mike Phillips. I mean, Jason Rose, the guys at Sonex. I mean, not thrown out. I mean, the Flex guys, the Rupes guys. I mean, there's so many good people out there. I mean, P&S, I can go on and on and on all these good people. And they far outweigh the guys that are causing drama in the industry. You just got to connect to the right people.
That's what I was going to talk about. Thanks for reminding me. Yeah, it's the top guys are so good and so not into arguing over what compound someone's using. And yet on the other reoccurring theme I'm seeing is that guys are being so turned off to forms because they're like, man, I don't have time to argue with a guy about, you know, I used a cutting a super cut cutting polish, and he thought I should use a ultra cut or what, you know. Guys are like, I don't have time for that.
Yeah. Well, my question is, when I have those guys come out, I say, why don't you bring I charge $1,000 a day. Why don't you take and bring $1,000 with you? And if you school me, you can keep my $1,000 in yours. But if I school you, I'm going to keep your $1,000. How's that? Mm-hmm. That usually shuts them up pretty quick.
Yeah, and you know, kind of going back to this podcast, and like we talked about before we started recording, is the vision and the hope is kind of just to elevate the whole game of the industry. And I look at guys when they just want to argue with other guys, it just kind of is bringing down the industry instead of really raising it up and helping other guys.
You know, we're all really independent people or we wouldn't be in business, or the majority of us are. And I'm going to use my own team because it's the guys I know the best. Here we got 32 guys up at Air Force One, right? All various ages, ranging from, I think our youngest individual was 21, and it goes all the way up to, we had guys in their early 60s. Wow. And you know how many arguments we had that on that 6 days?
How many?
None.
How many women were there?
We had,
just kidding. Don't answer that.
No. We actually, you know, my wife was, she headed up the, she was logistics. My two daughters, they helped her out with logistics. And then we did have Mel, one of our team members, outside of Washington, D.C., Air Force, 20-year Air Force veteran. She was on the team. Oh, and wow. Then a proud moment for me was last year, the Marine Corps sent my daughter, gave her orders to go and detail Air Force One.
Wow.
How cool is that?
That is cool.
And so you want to see me a big crying baby. You know, she comes up with the wing on me with those, you know, with that Marine Corps uniform on, and oh my God, I lost it, you know? So we've always had females on. I got three daughters and a son, so I'm kind of partial to my girls, but female detailers, to be direct, they've got a lot more attention to details.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I come from a family with three sisters, so I'm very well versed in female.
Yeah, I mean, we've got them all. And, you know, to get back kind of that question of, you know, the detailing industry of my favorite parts, I go back to, you know, I said one, the people, two, the transformation they have. And I'm going to go back to three and say the people. I mean, no matter what you do in life, if you can't treat people right and you can't do the right things and you can't admit when you're wrong and you can't build strong, solid friendships and alliances, there's a couple guys in this group that I'm half Italian and I grew up strongly in the Italian side of my family. I got a couple guys that come up and kiss me on the cheek, man, and they're big macho guys and they can bring me to my knees in a second. If I thought they were disappointed in me, I would be absolutely, one of them this week, he had a misunderstanding and he was kind of angry at me. And oh my God, it just ripped my heart out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever you do in life, people are the most important element. It doesn't come down to that. And you know what? When you love what you do and you work harder than the next guy, you're going to be successful.
Yep, absolutely. The key to success is just to get started and work harder.
That first step's the big one. After that, it's just a million linked together.
Absolutely. So I'm not going to say one thing, but because you could have multiple things. What are a few things that are really exciting you about the future of auto detailing?
Technology. And again, people, technology is unreal. Of what we're being able to do, what these product manufacturers coming out. And I'm going to tell you, is there one of them? Nah, there's a whole bunch of them. They're doing amazing things. Absolutely amazing things. What we're able to do in one or two steps. Now, we couldn't do it three steps 5 years ago.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember it was funny. I was talking with Jason Rose and Michael Stoops down at McGuire's, and I don't know if we were recording yet, but I was talking about, I remember in 2008, 2009, when I was first getting started, and you know, correcting, it was the three different polishes, three different pads, a couple different machines, and then System 1, or what's now System 51, came out.
Yeah.
You know, and we were kind of reminiscing about that, and now it's, you know, that was crazy technology. But like you said, that was what, 5, 6, 7 years ago? I mean,
yeah.
Look where we're going now. I love it.
Oh, it's unreal. You know, when System 1 came out, you know, and 105 and 205, all those products came out about that same time. Yeah. And it was a game changer, and now they're still great products. But you look at how far we've advanced, and it's unreal. The other thing that's happening is, and I hope I've played a part in it, is the educational side of detailing. Is we've gone from being a band of gypsies to where we're actually, I'm going to say, 5 to 10% of the industry is legitimate entrepreneurs now.
Yeah.
It was maybe 1% 5 years ago. So look at the difference. I mean, that's a huge difference. You know, I'm contacted every day, and the sophistication coming out of detailers, all ages. I don't care if they're 23 or 63. We just had a gentleman here that's in his second career. He was trained with us last week, 61 years old.
Wow.
And man, I'll tell you what, and I don't work people lightly. I mean, it's a workout while you're here. You're going to work very hard. And you know what? He stood up and he got through it, and he did absolutely fantastic. Would that have been the case 5 years ago? It would have killed him. And it would, because it was so much harder than it is today. Everything's changed.
That's interesting that you brought up the kind of the older crowd. Is I look at some of my stats from this podcast and stuff like that, and a significant amount of people are in that age group of their second careers. And it's, you know, it, like you said, it used to be kind of a young man's game, and it is still very taxing, but it's exciting to see some of these older people kind of discovering a new career.
You know what's amazing, and this is a fact that I can put numbers to, is that the young guys in our group, and I'm gonna say that it's probably industry-wide, they're doing the volume. Man, the volume's there. The profits go to the mature guys, the guys over, let's say, I would say 36 and older. That's the guys that are actually profitizing the very, very most. And the guys in their 40s, 50s, and 60s are at the highest.
Yeah, volume is definitely something that I'm trying to back out of in my personal business.
Good.
It's too taxing, man.
Good, good. Wait, it just, you know, here's the thing. You keep in shape. You know, I let myself go. I put almost 40 pounds on with four kids and when working so hard, and you know, I've been fit my whole life, and it got ahead of me. And, but I'm taking it back. Don't ever give it away. I mean, Just simple as that. Keep your passions. You know, I was off search and rescue for a few years. I've gone back, and you know what? Business isn't hurting. It's not hurting my business. It's helping my business.
Yeah, totally. It's a whole lifestyle thing, and detailing just fits into that nicely too, but you definitely gotta stay in shape for sure.
You do. If it's physically and mentally, and you know, you've got to keep everything. It's a balance system. And without balance, I know a lot of people are going after and they're working it hard, and I see them, but boy, I'll tell you, I've seen that video before of hitting their head against the wall because I did it. And yeah. I wish I could call them out and tell them what they're doing, but you know, you always take a chance on, boy, if they're, a lot of them aren't too happy that you call them out on it. So,
yeah,
you know.
Well, Rennie, it's been so fun having you on the show. I feel like we got to joke around a little bit. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. Give us some plugs. How can people get a hold of you? How can they reach out to you if they have questions? How can people find you?
Well, right now our website's being redone. It's going to be the same exact. Everything's the same. DetailingSuccess.com. If you want to take and email me, it's Rennie, R-E-N-N-Y, at DetailingSuccess.com. And then the best number to reach us at, and you're going to talk to my lovely wife, Diane, is 909-366-0909.
Perfect. And that was Rennie
at DetailingSuccess.com.
DetailingSuccess.com. And I will have everything linked up for all you guys listening. If you're driving or detailing a car right now, just head on over to AutoDetailingPodcast.com/Rennie Doyle, and you will be able to find all his information, connecting with him, call him on his phone. Obviously, it's not your cell phone, so that's okay.
Not. It's not, but you'll get a hold of me. You know what? You get the prettier half of it anyway. So, hey, Jimbo, the only way I'm going to hang this call up is if you agree. You've got to come on, either come up and do a video with me, or you've got to come on to our podcast. So.
Yeah, man, I'd love it. Either way, I think it'd be I went down to McGuire's and sat with Jason and Michael, and that was really cool to be in the same room with each other and be able to actually look at each other. So yeah. That would be super cool to come up.
Yeah, well, those are two greats, and they're good men. They've done a lot for the industry, and I'm happy to be their acquaintance. I've done a lot of off roading with Jason Rose through the years, and you know, it's Jason, heal your arm up. We need to go roading.
Yeah, he was in a cast when I went down there, so yeah. Or not a cast, but a pretty decent sling.
Well, hey, if anybody reaches out, you know, you can get to us or on our website. We got a lot of fun things coming up, a lot of open mics. A lot of webinars that we're going to be hosting once a month called Open Mic with Rennie. And it's just we get about 30 to 40 questions a day. We're going to put the best and most forward questions out and then open that up to all of you, the industry, once a month. So we're nice. Really excited about that.
Cool. Well, everyone listening, follow Rennie, connect with him so you can get on those webinars. That'd be fun. Let's help raise the bar of the whole industry. Rennie, again, thanks for joining us, and thanks for everyone for listening.
Thank you. Have a wonderful one and happy detailing, everybody.